Hello, and welcome to Coffee to Close, where we talk to interesting people with passions and pursuits in and around Brisbane, California, that beautiful yet rowdy, fiercely independent town on the border of San Francisco. Our hope is that you will be inspired and that in the process, we will raise some money for our local nonprofits. Sit back and enjoy. I'm your host, Ron Davis. Okay, so we're here today with Ann Thyme Gobble, Brisbane resident, and you moved here, what, in the 90s?
99, May of 99.
And I remember you guys contacted me online, and you saw Brisbane, mm-hmm. and you said, that looks like a pretty mm-hmm. cool little town. Mm-hmm. I think we might be interested in that town. So you gave me a call or sent me an email, and then you ended up coming and getting a
That's right.
nice place.
No, absolutely.
So how's it been working for you?
Oh, I love Brisbane. What happened was Randy, my husband, lived in the Bay Area for quite a long time and then moved away to grad school in San Diego, which is where we met. And then we actually went to Pittsburgh for a couple of years after school, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that is. Then once we knew we were coming back here, he's like, where should we move when we move back there? And he remembered when he was living here and driving up and down 101 saying, hey, that's a cool little town over there. What's up with that little town on the hill? Looked it up and we saw a listing on King's Road and we had a friend of ours go and look at it and take pictures and things like that. So we actually, first we were interested in that one.
Uh-huh.
Then we just contacted you, I think, at that point and said, hey, this looks pretty cool. We're going to come out and visit and stuff. So.
And even in 99, there was 7 offers
yes.
on the house.
Yeah, that was, that was a bubble time for sure.
It was mm-hmm. was something. So tell us about yourself and what you do, what your passions are.
Well, my overall passion really, in a way, is language and sound, specifically, you know, if we talk about language, so spoken language. And I've always been interested in languages and how people think and what makes people do things in certain ways, kind of understanding what's kind of underneath what people say and do. So I think I kind of ended up in the right area of work and studies and so on. So I went to school doing linguistics and cognitive science.
Mm-hmm.
Then kind of as I was doing that, I chose that just because I liked the topic and I wanted to do it. And I kind of was wondering, what am I going to do with this when I'm done? But fortunately, in the meantime, while I was in school, technology kind of caught up with the need for some of these things. And so much of what we see today with things like Siri and Alexa and Google Home and all these things that are voice activated, that's the kind of work that I was getting into, you know, the background, the needed parts of that long before. And a lot of time, I spent quite a few years at Nuance, for example, working on more of the call center style recognition, right? When you call on the phone and you get one of these systems that people love to hate where you can say what you're calling about.
Uh-huh.
But the thing about that is that there's a lot about what we had to figure out then that absolutely completely carries over now to Alexa and Siri and those things because people talk in certain ways, right? And if you're doing the technology bit, you have to understand what the dialogue is like and how to get people to both sort of say what they want in such a way that you can understand it and then respond in an appropriate way and that sort of thing. So,
what's the most exciting or interesting thing that has come of that in your career or things that you have seen develop that you didn't think was possible maybe?
That's a good point. The way to think about this work is the whole process of when somebody speaks to a device to get something back that you actually want is kind of a multi-step thing where first you have to actually recognize what they say. And then once you recognize the words, right, you have to map that into actually what it means, the semantics of it, and then map that into something that gives them the result. So if you're asking for a piece of music to play or something, you have to actually both understand that. If I say, you know, play Let It Be by the Beatles, right? First you have to actually understand the words.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to understand, oh, this person wants to hear this piece right now. And then you have to find the piece for them and then play it, right? So it's like multiple steps. So I think it used to be that the recognition part, it kind of almost failed at the first step because recognition was hard. But that's not solved, but much better now than it used to be. So now we're getting into the really interesting thing of understanding and cognition, right? Here, now you have to really kind of figure out, I get these words, but what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
So now it's kind of getting more interesting from that point of view. one of the coolest things, I think, was actually the startup I was at up to about a year ago, which was this mobile app to help people prepare for surgical procedures and things like that. Because what I liked about it was something that actually helped people. So, you know, with some procedures, you have to plan ahead, right? You might have some diet restrictions that you need to do. And it's really easy for people to kind of not follow the instructions or misunderstand them and so on. So we had this thing that was speech-driven where instead of having to read some instructions, you might just go around and say, okay, can I eat peanuts today? And it'll say, well, you can still eat peanuts today because it knows when your surgery is. And say, but tomorrow you can only drink water, for example. Or, you know, what can I eat today? Or is it okay to go exercise? No, you know, you should wait. Or yes, you can. That sort of thing. And I like that because it was both interesting from the language and, you know, just the sort of pure language recognition, you know, cognition way, but it was also something that was helpful.
You could tell it what it's about to eat and maybe have it tell you, well, you've had enough calories already today.
Well, right.
You should really think about that third glass of wine. Exactly. Hey, what are you eating there? What are you doing there?
Exactly.
What do you think is on the horizon that's, where can this go?
Although I'm not, because I know about how some of the stuff works, I'm not so concerned about the sort of eavesdropping aspect, because you can always turn it off, right? But I think what's really cool about it is trying to make more sense of the meaning of it, right? That it becomes something where you really, really have to understand how people think. I mean, if I say something like, can you pass me the salt? What I really mean is, give me the salt. If you say, yes, I can, but you don't give me the salt, I'm like, come on, right? But of course, how does a computer know that? Uh-huh. You have to actually translate those words into a yes, no question. Can you do this? But in fact, it's actually a request. I want this thing. So that's sort of a simple thing, just a simple example. But it's that level of understanding. You have to dig into all the different ways that people will ask for something and what do they really mean. And then getting into this kind of step-by-step dialogue, not for the sake of having a conversation with a computer, but actually being able to build on what's already been said and say, you know, I want this one, meaning what does the this refer to? Things like that.
Oh, yeah. People have to get over the fact that they're talking to not another person as well.
That's
which
right.
is always uncomfortable, oh, yeah. Especially on the phone. Yeah, mm-hmm. I want this. And, you know, you're making yourself sound foolish almost. That's probably a hurdle. But my new app that I got that helps manage my time, I can just say, hey, Siri, remind me tomorrow to do this. Mm-hmm. And it flows into the app and it flows into everything else. Mm-hmm. And then I get the buzz and the bells and everything else. It tells
That's
me,
right.
hey, don't
yeah.
forget, which is good. Because I could be driving down the road and I could just say, hey,
right.
Siri,
That's
remind
right.
me of this when I think of something.
That's
or,
right.
Hey, I got a new idea. I
yeah,
want this.
Right.
Which is awesome because I don't have to stop and write it down.
Yeah,
or,
that's right.
You know, sometimes when you come up with an idea, they're at the most mm-hmm. unopportune time to capture it.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to write it down. Or
yeah.
It's a great capture device.
Some of the sort of immediate areas that will be interesting too is if you have both a kind of multimodal thing, so you have both speech and something you can see, like a screen also where you can interact with the thing in various ways, right? You don't have to choose one over the other, but you can go back and forth between different modalities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like tapping or speaking or typing or whatever. So there's that. And then there's also the biometrics, the understanding who it is that's talking. So having something maybe at home, if you have one of these devices, but you have multiple people in the house using it, you kind of want to know who's talking. Because if you're talking to a person, they're not going to be confused if it's person A or person B talking, right? But of course, the device doesn't know that. They just get the string of words, right? So to be able to actually say, oh, okay, it's Anne talking instead of Ron talking, right? Also, you know, Anne likes this music or Ron likes that music, or Anne's Spotify account is this, and Ron doesn't have a Spotify account, whatever. That kind of information, right, you can build on that immediately, and you also don't trigger on things like the TV being on in the background because that's somebody else's voice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all that kind of stuff that will gradually make its way in and kind of, you know, make it work better for people.
If I can get my dog to stop barking at every dog that it sees on TV,
Exactly.
Doesn't know if it's real or not.
Is that bark recognition?
It's HD dog. Exactly. So that's all fun stuff. I look forward to, you know, using it some more. And I hope, and I probably, there is enough funding to keep that kind of technology
it's
on
huge.
The forefront. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's fun for people like me because, you know, I mean, yeah, I've taken programming classes. I'm not a programmer, right? I'm not an engineer per se. But right now, the people doing what I'm doing, we're very sought after. That's sort of nice.
Yeah. That's
always
great.
Nice.
Great.
Nice
and even when you were studying it, you didn't think where it would go.
No, not at all. I just thought
it was
cool. So actually, this is kind of a fun story. When I was a grad student and I was working for a company that I then started working for after I was done, and I was visiting my parents, and my parents live in Sweden. This was a long time ago because they had just gotten cable TV. I remember this. And I was in one room, and I heard my dad switching channels in the other room. But I couldn't hear what was actually being said. But I was listening to it, and I thought, I actually know, you know, what language channel he's listening to. Because being in Sweden, I suddenly had a couple of Swedish channels. And also they had, you know, Finnish, you know, CNN, something French, something German, something Italian, something Russian, whatever, multiple languages. And I'm listening to this thinking, I can actually tell what language he's listening to, but I can't hear the words. So what's up with that, right? So then I came back and I was chatting to the woman who owned the company I was working for, and she said, hey, this is really cool. Let's write some kind of grant for this, you know, and see if we can like dig into this. And it turned into this multi-year project of just trying to figure out what language was spoken just based on the sort of intonation pattern, the stresses, not the actual words or... Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of fun, and that's kind of stuff that I find really, really fun to look at.
Amazing. Well, it's fun to talk about all that stuff. You mentioned that your parents live in Sweden. Mm-hmm. They're still in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
You just got back.
I did.
Did you have a great trip?
I had a great trip. It's a beautiful place.
I kind of followed you on Facebook
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah.
Some beautiful scenery and pictures that you guys took. What, anything great happened on the trip that's like, unexpected?
Again, thanks to the wonders of Facebook, when it does its thing well, it works really well. So I actually hooked up with a school friend that I hadn't seen since college. We went to junior high together. A couple of years ago, we found each other on Facebook, and you know, she said, oh, next time you come to visit, you know, we have to get together. So I'm like, yeah, we have to. So I made a point of making sure that we could get together this time. And, you know, I haven't seen her since forever. Been like probably a good 30 years or something since I saw her. Right?
Yeah.
It's been a long time. And it was so much fun, you know, because we were immediately, I could spot you from far away. You walk the same, you know, you have the same speech patterns and things like that, right? Because that doesn't change. So we got to meet again, and I met her husband who I hadn't met before, and she got to meet my husband. And that was very fun. And then they recommended some excellent restaurants in Stockholm that we checked out.
Cool. Cool.
Food is always fun.
So you were born there?
Yes, I was born in Stockholm.
When did you come here?
I came here after high school.
Without your parents?
Without my parents. Now, my parents, when they were still working, both worked for the airlines, and we traveled a lot when I was growing up.
Mm.
So they're all for, yeah, sure, go live somewhere else. Actually, my dad actually emigrated to the States back in the mid-50s with a couple of school friends, and they thought they were going to stay over here, but then one of them stayed, and two of them, including my dad, went back to Sweden after a couple of years. So, you know, me moving over here, I was like, yeah, you know, been there, done that.
Yeah.
But I intended just to be here for a year of college. It was just a scholarship to be here for school, just for a year. Like, yeah, that sounds like fun. So I got that and went to Washington State, Eastern Washington, which was a great place for a foreign student, actually, because the people who go to school there tend to be from the west side of the state. So that's a six-hour drive away. So people don't just leave campus very often. So they have a big international program, which makes a lot of sense. But that was a lot of fun. So then, you know, as the year was drawing to a close, I was thinking, oh, gee, I wonder if I can stay on here. And there were possibilities of actually extending the scholarship and stuff like that. So then I stayed around, and then I got to my fourth year, and I thought, hey, you know, I don't actually... I'm ready to go back to Sweden yet. So I said, now what? And my advisor said, hey, why don't you apply to grad school? I'm like, why don't I? So I did. And I ended up at UCSD in San Diego. And then
the weather was a little different, too.
It was. My parents loved San Diego. When I lived in San Diego, they were so happy to come visit because, you know, weather was always 72. They would come in the spring and the fall. And, yeah, they really loved San Diego. Yeah, and then I met Randy in grad school. And so, you know, I the longest year ever. I never went back.
Cool. It's funny. My great-grandparents were Swedish on my mom's side. My grandmother was born here in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my mom's Swedish. And my sister was going to go back to Minnesota and visit. And so she said, she went online. She went to, what's the genealogy site?
Oh, Ancestry.
Ancestry.com. Mm-hmm. And put up a couple of messages or whatever. And I had researched my dad's side of the family back through Louisiana mm-hmm. and back to the Carolinas, back to the 1700s. Uh-huh. She said to me, oh, I got a message from somebody and I got all this information. And I'm thinking, oh, no, you didn't. It took me forever to get that kind of information because I did it a long mm-hmm, time ago mm-hmm. before there was even internet. I did all this information. She goes, no, I found somebody. And she found a guy who was in Sweden. His grandparents were friends with our great-grandparents. So he had letters. He had about, I don't know, 6-10 letters written from back and forth between the Sweden and here when they got here. They got here in the 1890s.
That's awesome.
I think it was 1890 they came, and my grandmother was born in 1904. They sent letters back. So I have letters from my great-grandparents talking to their friends in Sweden saying, come, you should come. We have a house now, and we bought a cow, and we could see all the beautiful countryside, and it's great here. And then a few years went by, and you could see the letters change. Mm-hmm. One of my grandmother's siblings passed away, and the economy got bad, I guess. And then they were telling people, don't come. It's really hard here now. And so there's we never really haven't translated all the letters yet, but
I'm happy to help you with that.
Oh, yeah. Interesting stuff there.
No problem.
Cool. That's great.
That's one of the things I did when I was in school. A couple times I did translation work for the airlines from Swedish to English.
Oh, yeah.
Or just for some stuff to get sort of, you know, free tickets to travel back and forth. So, I love doing translation stuff.
Maybe you can help me write a book from it. I would think, letters from my grandma.
Absolutely.
My great-grandma, whatever, you know, letters to Sweden or something. I think that the back and forth, that there's enough there for at least a short story.
No, totally. You
know, life in America.
Do you have any photos from back then of the family?
No, I don't think from that far back. Anyway, this has been great. I thank you for coming in. And is there any way anybody could get a hold of you? Should they have any linguistic questions or opportunities for you?
Absolutely. And actually, I would love to talk to people, especially if they interact with anything like Alexa or Google Home or Siri and so on. I oftentimes will ping my friends and acquaintances about, you know, hey, how do you like this and this? And what would you like for this? And I do a lot of sort of user experience stuff. So I would love for that kind of contact. Probably my Gmail.
Or maybe LinkedIn.
LinkedIn works. Sure.
And how do you say your name in Swedish?
If I'm in Sweden, I say it Antimi Gobel. But here I'd say Antime Gobel. Because, why mess with it?
So it's T-H-Y-M-E dash Gobel, G-O-B-B-E-L.
That's right. T-H-Y-M-E G-O-B-B-E-L.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Coffee to Close. Coffee to Close is a fundraiser for our local nonprofits and charities in Brisbane. And I will be donating $100 per episode to one of the charities or nonprofits in town. Coffee to Close is also sponsored by Davis & Company Real Estate. You can find us at rondavis.com and Madhouse Coffee, which is madhousecoffee.com. Both are located in Uptown Brisbane at the top of the main business district on Visitation Avenue at 400 Visitation. Come pay us a visit. We'd love to see you.